welcome to Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levin. You're bringing you shows from the golden age of radio. Coming up in this hour, sitcoms. In a while, we'll enjoy the life of Riley with movie star William Bendix. Right now, it's The Bickersons with Francis Langford and Lou Parker. Made popular on radio first with Don Ameche in the title role, this new version of the series broadcast on June 10th, 1951 on CBS.
The Bickersons, starring Francis Langford and Lou Parker. They fight, they yell, they squabble and squawk, but they love each other as much as any married couple in the world. That's Francis Langford and Lou Parker, stars of Philip Rapp's humorous creation, The Bickersons, produced and broadcast, transcribed from Hollywood. And here is John Bickerson himself, Lou Parker.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and good evening. Before we go any further, on behalf of Francis Langford and myself, courtesy demands that I thank you for your many kind letters regarding our first program. But inasmuch as you didn't send any, we'll dispense with that formality. Instead, I'd like to take this opportunity to present my favorite actress and singer, lovely Francis Langford.
The Bickersons are at the breakfast table. Adhering to the belief that it's wise to start the day with a substantial meal, they set to diligently at the groaning board. Blanche is groaning and John is bored.
John, you're not listening. I've been talking to you for 5 minutes and you haven't heard a word I said.
Have too.
What did I say?
You said, John, you're not listening.
I mean, before that.
I wasn't listening before that.
What?
I'm sorry, Blanche. I got to finish these sales reports. What did you say?
Nothing. Must you work at the kitchen table every morning? Why can't you sit down like every other husband and have a normal breakfast?
It's an abnormal breakfast.
It is not. Now put those papers away and eat your pig's feet.
I don't want any. I gotta work.
Well, stop dipping your pen in the coffee.
Is this coffee? I thought it was ink. Holy smoke, what have I been drinking?
You don't know what you're doing when you start with those sales reports of yours. For a man who sells no vacuum cleaners, you certainly do a lot of paperwork.
Who doesn't sell any vacuum cleaners? I sold $700 worth this week.
What do you get out of it?
5%.
Why, that's wonderful, John. How much is 5% of $700?
$35.
What do you mean, that's wonderful?
I didn't say it. You said it.
You sell $700 worth of vacuum cleaners, and all you get is a measly $35. Who gets the rest of it?
My employer gets the rest of it.
Why does he get it?
Because they're his vacuum cleaners. I only sell them for him.
Why don't you let him sell them for you? You can afford to give him $70 and still make a profit.
Blanche, I don't own the business. I'm only a salesman. Now, don't start upsetting me in the morning.
Well, for your information, Lorraine White's husband got her a new Cadillac last week.
Good.
And Elsie Block is on her third mink.
Well, her husband's a butcher. They can afford to eat mink and wear steak.
You a butcher.
What butcher?
You just didn't have enough brains to see the beef boom coming.
Listen, Blanche, I don't know what you've got on your mind this morning, but I haven't got time for it.
Well, I'm just sick of going around dressed like a pauper. Wherever I go, all the women point at me and say, there goes Bickerson's wife. Look how she's dressed.
For heaven's sakes, look how I'm dressed, and I'm Bickerson. Forget about mink coats, Blanche. We can't afford it. Where's my hat?
You're wearing it. Where are you rushing? You've still got 15 minutes and you haven't eaten a thing.
I haven't time. I'll eat out.
Why don't you eat at home?
I'm not hungry now. Save it for my supper tonight.
It won't keep. I saved it from your supper last night. I'm not going to throw away perfectly good food.
Well, then give it to the cat.
You hate that cat, don't you?
Blanche, please, I'll be late. Where's my vacuum cleaner?
You're wearing it. Must you carry that hose around your neck?
I only have two hands. Open the door.
Here, take the orange juice squeezer with you.
Is that thing broken again? Cost me $6 to have it fixed last week.
Well, they didn't do a good job. The first time I used it, an onion got caught in the motor. Why don't you fix it?
I'll fix it tonight.
You say it, but you won't do it. Do it now.
What?
Go on, take off that vacuum cleaner and fix the orange juicer.
Blanche, I gotta go to work. I can't be fixing orange juices.
Well, you've been screaming about saving money.
All right, I might as well. I don't make $6 a day. Give it to me.
The tools are in the bread box.
Hello, Mrs. Bickerson. Here's your fur coat. I put a new label in. Nobody noticed it.
Shh. Keep your voice down. My husband's still here.
Oh. Well, I'll bring it back later, huh?
No. No. Please, Mr. Strom, I can't afford it. You'll have to give me my money back.
Money back? I already changed the label and dyed the collar.
I can't help it. I have to have the money back. Please.
Blanche.
Just a minute, John. Listen, Mr. Strom, take the money over to Barney's house and leave it there. I'll do business with you some other time.
Who is that at the door?
I told him we didn't want any. Did you fix the orange juicer?
I fixed it.
How could you fix it? Needed a new motor.
I hooked it up to the vacuum cleaner.
Does it work?
It works fine, except it sucks up the juice and spits the pits in your face. So long, Blanche.
Rush all the way over here. What's so important that you couldn't have told me over the phone?
Barney's friend, Mr. Sturm, was here. You know, the furrier.
Oh, good.
Pass the ketchup.
Did he leave the money?
No.
Well, what did he leave?
He left town.
Oh, Barney.
Don't worry, I got the coat.
Well, I don't want the coat. I can't afford to keep it. Barney, you've got to get that money back. It's John's insurance money.
So what? He's good for years yet. More of them goat ribs, Clara.
You had no right to recommend that Mr. Strum to me.
Don't worry, Blanche. Mr. Sturm is honest. You'll get your money when he gets back from Las Vegas.
Las Vegas?
Yes.
Barney, why couldn't you get it before he left? He's your friend.
He's no friend of mine. That thief ducked out without even giving me my commission. Where's the marmalade?
Stop eating so much and help me figure out a way to get that money back.
The best way is to ask John for it.
He hasn't got it.
He hasn't got it.
Well, he'll get it. There's always money for an emergency.
What emergency?
What emergency?
Barney, go into your den. I want to talk to Blanche alone.
Secrets. Every time they got secrets, I have to go sit in my den. Give me some of that rutabaga pudding. Thanks.
Goodbye.
It's very simple, Blanche. John's so soft-hearted. Tell him that Mother's sick and you have to go visit her.
But I don't want to go all the way to Omaha.
You don't go to Omaha. You get the fare from John and come stay with us for a few days.
Oh, I couldn't do that, Clara. I've never lied to John before.
Oh, stop it. I'll send a wire and I'll sign it, Mother.
Oh, Clara, I'm afraid.
Leave everything to me. I'll get dressed right now and go down to the telegraph office. Go home and pack your bag.
Well, all right, Clara.
Good. Barney. Barney, where are you?
In my den, where you told me to go.
Well, come on out now. I want to take a shower.
Well, if you really have to go, Blanche, if your mother is that sick, I'll make the sacrifice and let you go. But I'm going to miss you terribly.
What are you smiling at?
Nothing. I was just thinking of a funny thing one of my customers
said. Never mind. Where's the fare?
It's in the sugar bowl. I was saving it for my insurance.
But don't touch that.
What?
Get away from that bowl, John.
What's wrong?
Well, something terrible would happen if I used that money.
Huh?
It's bad luck. Everybody knows it's bad luck to give insurance money to a wife to use for fare to visit a sick mother.
I never heard of such a thing.
All right, I won't go.
Wait a minute. If you're so superstitious, I'll withdraw the money from our Christmas fund savings.
Well, fine.
I'll pick up the train ticket at the same time.
Well, you can't do that.
Why not? It's no trouble.
It isn't that. It's bad luck. When somebody goes to visit a sick person and somebody else buys the ticket, the sick person might get sicker.
Everything's bad luck. What do you want me to do?
Well, you've got to give me the cash right now and let me buy the ticket myself.
Well, the only money I've got on me is the vacuum cleaner installments I collected today.
Now that's good luck.
Here are the groceries, Mr. Bickerson. Is Mrs. Bickerson away?
She's been gone 3 days. Her mother's been sick. Put that stuff in the kitchen.
Where's the kitchen?
Right behind that stack of dirty dishes in the doorway. Watch your step. Everything here?
Oh, yes, sir. A box of potato chips, 2 eggs, 8 limes, 2 dozen ginger ales, and 3 dozen club sodas.
Okay, you want to take back the empties?
Oh, I haven't got a truck with me, Mr. Bickerson.
Oh, well, you'll get them next time.
Sure. Maybe you'd like my wife to clean up for you while Mrs. Bickerson is gone. My wife is a fine housekeeper.
I'll manage.
For a couple of dollars, she would clean up that big pile of dirty laundry.
That's my bed. You got any matches? I've used up a whole box trying to light this stove.
Sure, here. It's hard for a man to keep the place clean when his wife is away, isn't it, Mr. Bickerson?
It's not so bad. It gets a little dusty once in a while, but the janitor lends me a shovel. You got another match?
Here. You sure you wouldn't like my wife to clean up for you? She's used to it. Our house looks like this all the time.
Darn it, I burned my finger. I can't light this stove.
Well, here, let me help you. I used to work in a kitchen.
You were a cook?
CCC camp, 3 years. I light this stove. Where's the wood?
Wood? That's a gas stove.
Oh, no, Mr. Bickerson, we're both wrong. This is an electric stove.
It is? For 3 days, I've been thinking the pilot light is clogged.
I got the light under the coffee.
Thanks, I'll handle it now. Let's see, where are the eggs?
Here.
What are you staring at? Lots of people like to fry eggs in their coffee.
Sure.
What do you mean, sure? You think you can do better?
I think so. If you like, I make you anything you like.
All I want is an omelet.
You mean just plain omelet?
Yes.
Okay. Have you got some Tabasco?
Tabasco?
Well, don't worry. This olive oil will take the sting out of it.
That's my sunburn lotion.
Same thing. Now, you chop up this onion while I melt the cheese and open up some beans.
Plain omelet. Here's the chopped onion.
You didn't peel it.
I never peel it. It spoils the vitamins. Why is there a mushroom-shaped cloud coming out of that pan?
The top fell off of the chili powder. I'll stir in some cornstarch.
You want me to slap the eggs in?
Oh, you don't need the eggs.
Huh?
Spoils the taste. Get a plate, Mr. Biggers, and she's ready now. Plain omelet.
Yeah. Thanks very much. Here's a half a buck for your trouble.
Oh, thank you.
First time I ever saw a dish like this.
First time I ever made it. Good night, Mr. Biggerson.
I wouldn't dream of eating this without trying it out on somebody first.
No. No.
Hmm.
No.
Come here, cat.
No.
Here's a nice big spoonful. That's right. Don't let it get on the floor. Eat it. Go on, eat it. Don't bury it in your sandbox. Well, I guess I go hungry again. Oh, I'm in bad shape. I must be in bad shape. I'm beginning to wish my wife was home.
Hello?
This is the long-distance operator. Are you the party who placed a call to Omaha?
Yes.
Well, the number still doesn't answer. We'll keep trying and call you back.
Thank you. Hello, Clara. How was the movie?
No good. Barney's seeing it over. Wish I hadn't gone. I never would have gone if you hadn't been here to watch the kids.
I thought I was doing you a favor. Here's Barney's shirts. I ironed them.
Well, why did you starch the collars? Barney hates starch. Did you give little Ernie a bath?
No. Listen, Clara, I don't see why a 14-year-old kid can't bathe himself.
He's very delicate.
He's bigger than Barney.
Well, how big is that? It wouldn't hurt you to give him a bath.
I didn't come here to be nursemaid to your kids.
What's the matter with you, Blanche? You've been on edge for 2 days.
I'm sick of this. Barney engineered the deal with the coat. You made me lie to my husband.
I didn't make you steal the insurance money.
I didn't steal it. I borrowed it. Never would have done that if it hadn't been for your husband.
Now, don't blame Barney. He's put himself out plenty to make you comfortable here.
Comfortable? You've been using me for a scrub woman and a nursemaid and a laundress, and on top of it all, I have to sleep in the bathtub. I'd rather go home and take the consequences.
You make it sound like I'm getting some gain out of it, Blanche. After all, who's going to get the pleasure of the mink coat? You or me?
I am. So if you don't mind, I wish you'd take it off and let me get out of here.
Well, sooner or later, the truth will out for poor Blanche Bickerson. Now, back to Francis Langford and Lou Parker as John and Blanche Bickerson in The Honeymoon is Over. Well, Blanche is back in her own bed again. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, but tortured by guilt, Mrs. Bickerson lies tense and awake in the darkness as poor husband John suffers through another attack of undulant insomnia or Blaster's reflex. Listen.
With a one-man band.
John!
Mm.
Turn over on your side. Go on.
Mm.
Stop it, stop it, stop it.
Stop it, Blanche. What's the matter? What's the matter, Blanche?
I'm going out of my mind. Haven't you caused me enough trouble for one night?
What trouble? What's the matter, Blanche?
Why didn't you let me in when I came home from Mother's tonight? I knocked on the door till my knuckles were blue.
I didn't hear you.
You didn't want to hear me. Stood out there in the hall completely exhausted. Fell asleep twice. What other man would let his wife sleep in the hall, John?
John Hall.
You'd better not be so funny, Mr. Bickerson.
Blanche, I'm not being funny. I'm just sleepy, that's all.
I finally had to wake the janitor to let me in. I was never so embarrassed in all my life.
Nothing to be embarrassed about.
Oh, no? He opened the letterbox to look for the extra key and found this pint of bourbon.
Give me that.
What was it doing in the letterbox, John?
That's my dividend. I belong to the Bottle of the Month Club.
That's why we never have any money. You squander every penny on bourbon.
I don't squander anything on bourbon.
Not much. The whole house is full of empty bottles. Where did they come from if you didn't buy them?
I never bought an empty bottle in my life, and you know it.
And why don't you get rid of them? Answer me, John. Why are you so attached to a lot of dead bourbon bottles?
I was with them when they passed away. Blanche, you spent a few days with your mother and you had a good rest. Now you come home and you're twice as jumpy.
Well, I can't help it. You act like you hate me.
Blanche, darling, I don't hate you.
Are you sorry I came home?
You know I am.
What?
I mean, no.
Did you miss me?
Yes.
I don't believe it. You never missed me for a minute.
I tell you, I did.
Well, say it.
I missed you for a minute. Please put out the lights and let me get some sleep.
Nobody knows how I suffer. Take a long trip to Omaha and come home to have you scream at me.
I'm not screaming.
You might at least ask me how I enjoyed my trip.
I'll ask in the morning.
You knew my mother wasn't feeling too well. Wouldn't hurt for you to ask how she is.
How is she?
Why do you care?
I don't. I'm just trying to be polite.
Well, you needn't try. I'm fully aware of how much you despise my family, and they feel the same way about you.
Is that so?
Yes, it is. In all the years we've been married, you've never cared about a single member of my family.
How can you say that, Blanche? Not a day goes by that I don't inquire the state of your rich uncle's health.
I don't like the way you inquire.
What do you mean?
It isn't nice to keep asking, is the old goat dead yet?
Blanche, I just wish you'd let me sleep for one night without disturbing.
I didn't disturb you for a whole week, did I?
3 days.
All right, 3 days. I hate to think of what you've done to this place since I've been gone. Suppose you left a stack of dirty dishes in the sink.
No dishes.
Were the animals fed regularly?
Every day.
Did you put fresh sand in the cat's bed?
Mmm.
The water in the goldfish bowl should have been changed on Sunday.
I changed it. I cleaned up everything.
How's the canary?
I don't know. I haven't seen him since I vacuumed his cage.
John Bickerson!
No, don't blow your top. The canary's fine.
Did you give him his bath?
I gave him his bath, I powdered his tail, and I plucked his eyebrows. What do you want from me, Blanche?
Where's Nature Boy?
Who's Nature Boy?
The cat. Did you let him out tonight?
No.
Why not?
He never came in. Listen, Blanche, I knocked myself out working all day, then come home and have to play nursemaid to a broken-down canary and an alley cat.
He's a beautiful cat, and I love him.
I hate him.
Well, you wouldn't feel that way if you got a little friendly with him. It's easy to make up to a cat.
Mm.
Why don't you bring him something to play with?
I'll bring him a dog in the morning. Good night.
What was that?
What was what?
There's a mouse in the room, John.
There's no mouse.
I swear I heard a mouse squeak.
Well, what do you want me to do? Get up and oil it?
Oh, it's the cat. Poor thing looks half starved since I've been away.
He ate more than I did. Go to sleep, Blanche.
Suppose I'll have to get some groceries tomorrow. Are there any eggs for breakfast?
No.
Then you'll have to eat out.
I don't care. I've been doing it all week.
Well, don't blame me.
I worked for 3 hours before I left to bake you a lovely rhubarb pie. I'll bet you didn't even touch it.
It didn't look good.
What was the matter with it?
Who ever heard of a pie 2 feet long?
Well, I couldn't get any shorter rhubarb. You didn't eat home. I left enough food for a week. I cooked a whole bathtub full of rice. What happened to it?
I took a bath in it.
Why didn't you eat it?
I've told you a million times I can't stand the sight of rice.
Why not?
Because it's connected with one of the saddest mistakes of my life.
All right, John Bickerson. Just for that, I'll never do another thing for you. No more cooking.
Good.
No more laundry.
Wonderful.
Maybe you won't be so smug if you don't get a clean tablecloth.
I can eat without a tablecloth.
I'm not talking about eating.
What do you mean?
What do you think you've been sleeping on?
What? What happened to the bed sheets? Why do I have to sleep on a tablecloth?
Well, it was too soiled to use on the table, but not dirty enough to go to the laundry.
Now listen to me, Blanche. I work hard for a living, and I want to sleep on a bed sheet.
Well, I work hard, too. It's about time you got me a maid.
You had a maid.
Yes, but how long was she with us?
She was never with us. She was against this from the start.
Well, she was no good anyway. She never swept behind the door.
She did, too. She swept everything behind the door. I can't afford to hire any maid, and you know it. Put out the lights and let me get some sleep.
I can just hear you raising your voice to Gloria Gooseby.
Now, don't start with Gloria Gooseby.
Believe me, if you were around her for a little while, you'd cool off in a hurry.
I've been around her for hours, and I never cool off.
Staring at you like she's hypnotized.
She doesn't stare. It's just that she wears those outlandish dresses and they bring out her eyes.
They bring out yours, too.
Now listen to me, Blanche.
Oh, hush up and go to sleep.
Go to sleep, she says. Put sand in my rhubarb. Gives me rice baths. Gloria Gooseby. My head is splitting. I'll never sleep another wink as long as I...
John.
Hmm.
The telephone. Answer it.
Hello.
Go to the phone and answer it.
Must be 4 o'clock in the... Oh! Oh! Put on the lights.
The lights are on. Take off your sleep shade.
Hello.
We're ready now on your call to Omaha.
What call to Omaha?
Better give it to me, John.
Here is your party.
Let go, Blanche. I'm not going to be charged for a call to Omaha that I didn't make. Operator.
Hello? Is that you, John? What's wrong with Blanche?
Nothing's wrong with Blanche, Mother. Why?
Give me the phone.
In a minute. Hello.
John, you're keeping something from me. Why did Blanche try to call me from Clara's house?
From Clara's?
Give it to me, John, before it's too late.
Let go. I tell you, there's nothing wrong with Blanche. She's fine.
Then why doesn't she ever come to visit me? It's been 2 years since I've seen her.
2 years, huh? Just a minute, Mother. I'll put Blanche on.
Never mind. It's too late.
Go on, Blanche. The least you can do is talk to your poor sick mother that you haven't seen in 2 years. Get on the phone.
Hello?
What's wrong, Blanche? He been beating you?
Not yet.
What?
Nothing, Mother. It was all a mistake. I'll call you back in the morning.
But, Blanche...
I've got to hang up now, Mother. Something's burning.
In the middle of the night, what could be burning?
Me.
Goodbye, Mother.
Better start talking, Blanche. Why did you tell me you were going to Omaha?
Now, don't get angry.
Where's the money I gave you for fare?
Fare?
Yes, fare. Where's the money?
I haven't got it.
What have you done with the money, Blanche?
Sit up, John. I bought a mink coat.
A mink coat? How much was it?
Lie down, John.
Blanche, how dare you go out and spend money on a mink coat? We can't afford a mink coat.
Don't scream at me.
I deny myself everything. I've been nailing rubber heels on my socks to save on shoes. Last week, I hocked my fillings to pay the dentist bill. I never spend a penny on myself. And she has to have a mink coat.
You bought a tie last week.
It wasn't a tie. It was a rope to hold my jacket together. Where's the coat? Let me see it.
Oh, you love it, John. It's not nearly as expensive as you think, either. Barney said it was a steal.
Barney? Oh, that chiseler.
Here. Isn't it gorgeous?
Well, take it out of that burlap bag.
It isn't in any bag. That's the coat.
What kind of a coat is that? It hasn't got any fur on it.
That's the latest style, silly. Bald me.
Bald me? How can you squander my good money for a bald mink?
It's nice and cool for summer wear. Look at the lovely cut. Aren't the pockets roomy?
They won't even hold a quart. Take that coat back, do you hear me? I'm not going into debt for any bald-headed minks.
Oh, John, how can you be so cruel?
Take it back.
Please, John.
No.
Please.
Oh, what's the use?
I love you, John. You're the most generous and wonderful husband in the world.
Go to sleep, Blanche.
Can I keep the coat, John?
Oh, I slave and sweat to keep body and soul together. Deprive myself of every tiny luxury to make both ends meet. It isn't worth it. In one fell swoop, she squanders 2 years' savings. What's a man got to live for? I wish I had the courage to... I think I will. Nobody cares about me anyway. One shot and I'll find peace.
John!
Ah. Wonderful bourbon. Good night, Blanche.
Good night, John.
The Bickersons on Tuned to Yesterday from June 10th, 1951 on CBS. They had begun on Don Ameche's variety show known as Dreamtime in 1946 just as a segment between Ameche and Francis Langford, and was so popular that the characters created by Phil Rapp were given their own series in September of 1947 for a relatively short run before returning to air with the series we just heard, setting the precedent for one of early television's most popular programs, The Honeymooners. It's an hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now on to the life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. Actually, there's a Honeymooners connection within this. When the program went to TV for the first time in 1949, Jackie Gleason, who would end up playing Ralph Cramden on The Honeymooners, was cast as Chester A. Riley, which didn't pan out too well for Gleason, who would then go on to host his own famous variety show. And William Bendix, the star of the radio series, ended up getting that full-time gig. Let's enjoy one of the radio episodes now, heard on NBC on December 3rd, 1948.
Mel brings you The Life of Riley. Well, the shampoo that removes unsightly dandruff in as little as 3 minutes, leaves hair more radiantly clean, radiantly lovely, presents The Life of Riley, with William Bendix as Riley. Every father strives to bring his son up to be 100% American, but not Chester A. Riley. Riley strives to make his son a 200% American. So now we find Junior Riley on a pleasant Sunday afternoon being lectured on one of the fundamental principles of the American way of life, as Riley sees it. Namely, that the man who gets ahead does so on his own merit.
I'm shocked, Junior. I'm absolutely shocked.
But, Pa,
I never thought my own son would act like that.
But, Pa,
is this the way I brought you up?
No, Pa.
Now you go and do a thing like this. I'm sore, Junior. I'm really sore. I'm burning up. I'm speechless.
But, Pa,
I don't want to hear your excuses.
Where were you all afternoon?
Never mind where I was. Peg, ask your son where he was. I tell you, I'm so burned up, I'm speechless.
Yes, I know. I could hear you being speechless 2 blocks away.
Where do you hear this, Peg? And you always said that Junior is the kind of a kid I was when I was a boy. Well, where do you think he was this afternoon?
Junior, you went to the burlesque show.
Oh, no, Mom. I was over at my math teacher's house.
Oh, well, what's so terrible about that, Riley?
He was raking her leaves, and ask him why.
Well, I still don't see the harm. I haven't been doing so well in math, and she lives over in the next block. So I figured if I could rake leaves for her, I'd stand a better chance of getting a good mark.
Bribery. Out and out bribery. Here I raise a boy, and I have hopes that someday he'll turn out to be a banker or a doctor or an engineer. And what do I get? A politician.
Now, wait, Riley, it isn't that bad. Just because he raked the teacher's leaves...
You don't understand, Peg. It ain't the teacher's leaves. It's the principal. For years, I've been telling him the only way to get ahead is to do it under your own steam. Merit, that's what counts. Not bribery, not pull or influence. Merit. That's all I care about. The principle.
Well, your father's right, Junior.
Besides, why couldn't he rake our leaves?
That's not the point. But what your father said before is true. That's not the way to get ahead in the world.
Well, it's one way.
But it's not the American way. Can you imagine me doing a thing like that?
Well, no, Pop.
Of course not. Look at my career at Stevenson Aircraft. Look at the way I started out there 10 years ago as an ordinary riveter. But I worked hard. I didn't use no pull. I didn't think up angles, because I knew that ability is the only thing that counts. And today, only 10 years later, look where I... Look where... Look at Henry Ford.
Oh, but gee, Pop, it can't do any harm to have a little pull.
Don't mean a thing. Not in the long run. Work. That's the secret of success. Work. That's what made this country great. We took it when it was nothing but a wilderness, and we worked and worked until we made it the richest country in the world.
But why are you one of the poorest men in it?
Because I haven't got any pull. I mean... go to your room, Junior.
Okay, Pop.
And work on your mathematics. That's the way you'll get ahead.
Okay, Pop.
I'm sorry I yelled, Peg, but that kid's got to learn.
You're right, dear. For once.
Like I said to Gillis only this afternoon. Gillis, I said...
Where were you this afternoon?
Over at my boss's house fixing his roof.
Well, that's good. We can use the extra money.
You bet we can. Too bad we ain't getting any.
You're not.
Oh, no. I'm just doing him a favor. You see, there's an opening for a foreman's job at the plant, so I figured
Chester
that...
Chester Riley, after the speech you've just made to Junior, you have the nerve to stand there and tell me that you deliberately went to your boss's house to fix a roof just so you could get in good with him? How could you?
It was easy.
Oh, I can't understand you, Riley.
Let me explain, Peg. The boss happened to drop this remark about a leak in his roof, so Gillis offered to work on it. And being Gillis is my best friend, I offered to help him. Not that I care about the foreman's job. I just don't want Gillis to get it. You see?
You bet I see. Bootlicking, that's what it is. And what's more, the roof of this house has been leaking for 6 months. Why don't you fix that?
What for? The boss don't live here.
Oh, aren't you ashamed of yourself? Don't you feel like a hypocrite after that big lecture you gave Junior?
Don't use pull. Don't use influence. Work. Depend on your ability.
Well, my case is different.
Why is it different?
Well, I ain't got no ability. Thought you had me trapped, huh?
Hi there, Riley.
Oh, hi, Gillis.
What's the matter, pal? Did you get out of the wrong side of the bed this morning?
I had an argument with Peg last night. You know what she said to me?
How should I know? I ain't the type of person who goes snooping around at night, eavesdropping on his next-door neighbor.
Well, she bawled me out for fixing the boss's roof with you. Boy, I told her off plenty.
You were right. After all, you ain't got no ability.
Gillis, you heard.
Accidental. I was out walking my dog and his leash got caught on your front doorknob. But believe me, pal, when I heard her rip into you, it sure burned me up. I was so mad, I
know, you were speechless.
Yeah.
But sometimes, Gillis, I wish you were earless, too.
You know, Riley, that wife of yours sure has got a lot of nerve making cracks about us helping out on our boss's roof.
Well, sure. After all, we got to think of our future.
Sure, we want to get ahead.
We got families to think of.
Yeah, we're doing it for our family.
Let them call us hypocrites. Let them say we're bootlickers and toadies and boss lovers. Oh, Gillis, she was right. I ain't fit to associate with human beings.
Yeah, I ain't fit to associate with human beings neither.
We just have to go around with each other.
I'm ashamed. A body without a soul. What's the use living when you lose your self-respect?
Now, well, wait a minute, Gillis. We got a chance to get it back.
Yeah, how?
We're going to give that conniving Stevenson who tricked us into working for nothing a bill.
That's it, Riley. Then we'll be men again.
Yeah.
I'll make it out right now.
Yeah, here's
the
pencil.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To Mr. Carl Stevenson, Esquire.
Abbreviate that.
Yeah, I did. ESS.
Oh.
For professional services rendered. Ipso facto, fixin' one roof.
What's the ipso facto for?
I don't know. I seen it on a bill somewhere.
Well, leave it in. It looks good.
Fixin' one roof. 4 hours at $3 per hour. Total? $12.
Double time for working Sundays.
Yeah, makes $24.
Three Cokes consumed on the job.
But we took him out of his icebox.
Well, he don't know that. That makes a grand total of $24.15.
$24.15. Boy, I'm beginning to feel like a man again.
Good.
Riley.
Yeah?
You think maybe when the boss gets this bill, he'll blow his top and maybe fire us? Huh, Riley?
Well, let him. I don't care. I ain't afraid. And to prove it, give me that pencil, Gillis. I'll sign it. G-I-L-L-I-S. There.
You're right. And to prove I ain't afraid neither, I'm signing it, Riley. Give me that pencil. R-I-L-E-Y. Here we are, Riley. You got the bill?
Yeah, boy, I can hardly wait to see the look on Stevenson's face when we slap it on him.
Well, let's go in, Riley.
No, wait a minute, Gillis. Before we go in, you know, anything might happen in there with the boss, but I want you to know that no matter what happens, I'm sticking with you to the end, pal.
And I'm sticking with you, pal.
And this ain't just talk, Gillis. Actions speak louder than words. So... here, pal.
Hey, this is a ticket for the USC Notre Dame game tomorrow.
Well, I have two. I got them from Babs's boyfriend. He's a sub on USC. Here, take it. It's yours, pal.
Right. You're doing this for me?
Certainly.
Why, they're all sold out. You can get $15 for this ticket.
Yeah, I know. But with me, friendship comes first. So I'm letting you have it for $14.
Thanks, pal. And if I forget to give you the dough, remind me on payday.
Oh, now, Gillis.
And keep on reminding me every payday. Well, let's go in and face the enemy.
Yeah, together, like buddies.
Yeah. And we ain't got a crack on a fire.
No, sir, we ain't retreating an inch.
Well, this is it, buddy. 0 hour.
Yeah. We're going over the top.
I'm with you, soldier.
Forward, march!
Riley. Hey, wait, you two. Where are you going? Wait! Help! When did you two get drafted?
Billy, we're here on business.
Yeah, serious business. We want to see the boss.
We'll come back some other time. He's in a bad mood. He's going over the cost sheet.
Well, we're in a worse mood. Tell him we're here.
But, Riley, I'm warning you. He... yes, Mr. Stevenson?
Billy, what's this $8 item here against transportation?
Oh, that was Albertson in the machine shop. He went down to Santa Monica to pick up that box of special rivets, and he took a taxi.
Oh, he did he? Taxis. What am I running here, a resort? Since when did the buses stop running? Everybody around here thinks I'm made of money. Fire Albertson.
You heard, Gillis?
I heard.
Any other guys hearing that would turn yellow.
Yeah, but not you, right?
You neither, Gillis.
Nah. Don't think for 1 minute that I still ain't got the guts to walk in it.
I believe you, and don't think I ain't got the guts to do it.
I believe you, too.
Well, now that we've proved it, we can tear up this bill.
Yeah, well, after all, it's not the money. It's the principle.
Yeah, let's get out of here, pal.
Billy.
Yes, Mr. Stevenson.
I don't see a voucher here for those football tickets.
I couldn't get them, Mr. Stevenson. All sold out. Shall I try the speculators?
No, I'm not spending $40 for 2 football tickets. Keep on trying the stadium.
He expects miracles. You boys want to be made foreman? Get him a couple of tickets for tomorrow's game.
Foreman? Is that a fact?
Foreman? Is that a fact?
Well, he'd be very grateful.
Are you coming, Riley?
Well? Oh, yeah, I'm coming. 2 tickets, huh? Not one. Come on, Gillis.
What? Oh, yeah. I'm coming. 2 tickets, huh? Not one.
See you later, Millie. Come on, Gillis. Gillis.
Riley, no.
No!
You double-crosser. I know what's going on in your mind.
You welcher. I know what you're up to. You want me to sell you my ticket?
You want me to sell you my ticket?
Well, don't you worry. I'll get it.
You'll have to fight for it.
Oh,
so it's a fight you want. Okay with me. No Riley ain't afraid of no Gillis.
And no Gillis is afraid of no Riley. Choose your weapon.
I will. My son, Junior, against your son, Egbert. Ten rounds to a decision.
It's a deal. When?
My backyard.
When?
Right now. And when my Junior knocked out your Egbert, that'll prove the kind of a yellow rat you are.
Riley, what's the matter?
What's up, Pa?
You look so wild.
You bet I'm wild. I'm raging.
Well, what happened?
A man can only take so much, and that's all.
What are you raving about?
That's no good double-crossing Gillis.
Oh, I thought he was your best friend.
Yeah, so did I. We've been pals for a lifetime, like two fountain pens. And then he squirts ink in my eye. But this time he went too far. This time he's going to get his.
Now, wait, Riley. I won't have you fighting Gillis.
No, you stay out of this, Peg. Sometimes if a man wants to save his self-respect, there's got to be a fight.
You'll get hurt.
No, I won't.
Oh, how do you know?
Because Junior's doing the fighting.
Who, me? I'm going to fight Mr. Gillis?
No, Egbert.
Riley, have you gone out of your mind?
But I like Edward. He's my best friend. I don't want to fight him.
My own son, Yella.
Well, of all the, this is the most ridiculous. You have a quarrel with Gillis, and you want Junior to fight. Why don't you and Gillis fight?
Hey, fight? Me? With my weak archer? And poor Gillis with his low blood pressure? We got our families to think of.
So you get Junior and Egbert to fight. Well, why stop there? Why not have me and Mrs. Gillis slug it out?
Would you? I mean, listen, Peg, I got no time.
You listen
for...
to me. This is the craziest thing I ever heard of. And if you think I'm going to let you do...
Now, you don't understand. I got to get that football ticket.
Oh, what ticket?
The one I gave Gillis. He won't sell it back to me, but if I get it, then I'll have two to give to the boss, and then I'm a cinch to be made foreman.
Now, look here, Riley. You forget all this nonsense about fighting, and let's have a little peace and quiet around here.
Oh, okay, Peg, okay. I'll forget it. Must be some way to get that ticket out.
Oh, will you stop?
I can only trick him into it some way, I think.
Riley, is it worth it?
How can I get him to... I got it. Peg, I got it. What a brainwave.
Riley, I won't stand for another one of
Wait,
your
brainwaves. You don't even know what it is yet. This is a great idea. Will you hear? I phone up Gillis, see?
Yeah, and then what, Pop?
I pretend that I'm Stevenson.
Stevenson?
Well, sure, I imitate his voice.
Oh, you can't do that.
Well, sure I can. Listen... Hello, Stevenson speaking. How's that sound?
Sounds like you have a cold.
Oh, go on. It's a perfect imitation. Gillis will fall for it like a ton of bricks. I'll tell him I heard he has an extra ticket, and I'd appreciate it if he'd let Riley have it. He won't dare say no, and then I got him.
It'll never work, Riley.
Oh, no, watch. Nobody but me could think of a stunt like this.
You answer, honeybee. I'm busy thinking. How can I get that ticket from Riley?
Hello?
Hello? I'd like to speak to Gillis, please.
Just a minute. It's for you, Jimsy.
Who is it?
It's Riley. Sounds like he has a cold.
Riley, what does he want? I don't want to talk to him. Hang up. No, wait. I just got an idea.
What an idea! What an idea!
What, Jim?
Hello? Hello?
Hold the wire.
I'll talk to him, all right, but I'm going to pretend I'm Stevenson. I'll say I'm visiting Gillis, and I'll order him to give his ticket to Gillis. You get it?
Oh, Jimsy, that's clever.
Watch me operate.
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This here is Stevenson. Who is this?
This is Stevenson, too.
I said this is Stevenson.
Yes, this is Stevenson.
I'm over here at Gillis's.
Ridiculous. How can I be at the Gillis's when I'm over here at the Riley's?
Look, this is Stevenson.
No, this is Stevenson.
Huh?
Huh?
You phony.
You fake.
I'll never trust you again as long as I live.
Likewise, I'm sure.
What a life. You can't depend on nobody. In the end, your friends always let you down. Well, I learned my lesson. This is the last time anybody's going to let me down.
Would you care to bet?
Oh, it's you.
Yes, it is I indeed. Digby Odell, the friendly undertaker. Greetings, Riley. You're looking fine. Very natural.
Well, I don't feel so good, Digger.
I don't say this to everybody, but see your doctor.
I don't need a doctor. I'm all mixed up in my mind. I think maybe I ought to see one of them psychiatrists.
Oh, nonsense. Too many people are running to psychiatrists these days. In our profession, we have a saying, the mind will take care of itself. Just look after the body.
Life is funny, Digger. The older you get, the more troubles you have. We don't have fun like we did when we were kids.
Ah, the carefree days of our youth.
Yeah, those were the days. Remember when we went on that picnic with those girls and we took your father's business vehicle without his knowing?
Yes, and we didn't know that old man McGillicuddy was still in the back.
No.
It was the first time in 40 years that old man McGillicuddy went out with girls. Those were the days.
Yeah, now nothing but trouble.
Maybe I can help.
No, not unless you can let me have a ticket for tomorrow's game. If I had one, I could get promoted to foreman, I think. But they're all sold out. It's hopeless.
Oh, come, come, Riley. Never say die, if you'll pardon the expression. Go to a speculator.
Yeah, but they want 20 bucks.
It's worth it to become foreman.
Well, yeah, sure, but I ain't got the dough.
I'll lend it to you. Here.
But I don't know when I can pay you back. Will you carry me?
Glad to. It isn't the first time I've carried you, and it won't be the last.
Oh, well, thanks, Digger, but you're sure you can spare it?
Well, of course. I've had a very good year. I've been piling up customers.
Yeah, gee, you've been in business a long time. I bet if all your customers were laid end to end...
They are. Well, cheerio. I'd better be shoveling off.
Millie?
Yes, Mr. Stevenson.
Any luck with the football tickets, Millie?
No, sir. But the speculators have...
No. I will not pay speculator prices. It's highway robbery. Just forget about it, Millie. I'm going home now.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Millie, is the boss in? I gotta see the boss.
What about?
Oh, you'll never guess. Millie, you're looking at a new foreman.
What?
Look. Two tickets for the boss for the big game.
Oh, I think he just left. I'll catch him at the elevator.
Good.
Hey, watch the switchboard for me, will you?
Yeah, leave it to me. I'll sit right here and take all the messages. Wait till that chump Riley finds out I put one over on him. Cost me 20 bucks, but it's worth it.
Millie, I gotta see the boss quick. I got him two tickets. Cost me 20 bucks, but it's worth it. But, Millie, didn't you hear me, Millie? Millie, you look different. You need a shave. You... Gillis! You weasel!
You double-crosser!
Hello, boy.
Boss, I got two tickets. Look,
here's the ticket, boss. I know you want to try to get me.
You mean to tell me that you fellas each got me two tickets for the game?
Yeah.
This beats everything. I wanted those tickets to give you to show my appreciation for fixing my roof. Bring me four tickets. Well, I'll tell you what. Here, one for you, Riley, one for you, Gillis, and two for me. Naturally, I won't insult you by offering to pay for my two, but I insist on paying for your two.
Yeah, but...
No. I insist on paying whatever they cost you. How much?
Well, boss, if you...
Here's the price right on the ticket. $360 apiece.
What?
Likewise.
There you are, Riley. 360. There you are, Gillis. Enjoy the game with my compliments. Well, have a nice weekend, boys. But don't be late for work on Monday. I just hired a new foreman. He's a tough baby. Well, have fun.
What a revolting development this is. There's something wrong, Gillis. Now, let's try and figure this out once more.
Figure it out. Riley, for Pete's sake, that's all you've been doing since we got into this here stadium.
Yeah, now, look, first I got two free tickets from my daughter.
You got two free tickets, and you gave me one.
Yeah, and they cost me nothing. But you owe me 14 for one.
Yeah, but the boss gave me 360 for that one.
Oh, no. He gave you 360 for the one that cost you 20. That leaves $16.40.
Yeah, but don't you see, you paid $20 for that one ticket, too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I got $3.60 back, so that means 20 minus 360 plus 1640 minus, plus.
Riley, will you stop already? We'll figure out after the game. It's costing us a fortune to sit here, so at least let's watch. Look, I think they're starting the game.
Well, oh, yeah. Okay, let's watch. What's that, Gillis? What's happening?
And there goes the final gun, and the game is over.
It's a losing fight.
The Life of Riley on Tuned to Yesterday from December 3rd, 1948 on NBC. That brings to a close this hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levionier. Thanks for tuning in.